An officer of Varag says, King, shall we make a new decree? The king says, well, no, the decree is in the fire. Let it stay there. I'll think of other things to do as a king rather than to go against the Jews. And that, boys, is the story. Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech are walking in the road. Where are we going to eat breakfast today, my brother? Don't worry. Where do we eat breakfast every day? Wherever Hashem shows us, there's some breakfast. And they meet somebody, and the person has some food, and they share the food. Oh, Baruch Hashem, we had breakfast. Where will we eat lunch today? Oh, don't worry, something will happen. And something happens, and they have lunch. Where will we eat supper tonight? Well, where do we eat supper every night? We have no idea. Somewhere, somehow, some way, we'll find a place to eat supper. And sure enough, they find a place for supper. Where will we sleep tonight, my brother? Don't worry. Where do we sleep every night? Maybe a barn, maybe somebody's house, or maybe under a tree. The two brothers were wandering around. This is before they became known, famous, big tzaddikim. They were still big tzaddikim, but nobody knew they were big tzaddikim. People thought they were just two beggars. And they would wander around. And of course, why did they do this wandering around? Kinalach, they put themselves in gullus, wandering around from place to place, because this way they would learn a lot about all kinds of different yidden, all kinds of different people, and sometimes they would help people. Many times they would find people in trouble and help them. And there are many lessons they learned wandering around in Golus. And of course, they would always see Hashem's Hashkacha Pratis, how Hashem was always with them and helping them. But people did not know who they were. They thought, these are two beggars. One day, it was Erev Shabbos, and the two brothers, Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech, are walking on the road. Where are we going to spend Shabbos? Well, we don't know. Hashem will help. We'll find a place for Shabbos. They came now to a very poor town. How could you tell it's a poor town? Well, just look at the houses. Broken down. A very poor town. And they go to the shul. Well, this is a very poor shul. You could tell it was a very, very simple, poor shul with poor people in there. And it was very close to Shabbos. And people were already davening mincha. And then they davened Kabbalah Shabbos. And then they davened Shabbos davening. And the two brothers, Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech, are also davening in the shul. And then it goes, and then by the end of davening, people say good Shabbos, and they're going home to eat the Shabbos meal. Well, what do you think Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech would like to happen now as people are going home to eat their Shabbos meal?
Come with them.
They would like somebody to say, come with us to be our guests. But one person walks by, doesn't invite them. The next person walks by, doesn't invite them. And Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech knew why. They're probably so poor, they hardly have enough food for themselves. How can they have food not only for one guest, but two guests? Well, one by one, everybody left the shul, until it was almost empty. There were only three people left, Reb Zusha, Reb Elimelech, and the Rav. Well, Kinalach, the Rav sees in his shul are two strangers. And he goes over to them and he says, please, come with me to be my guests. I'm sorry, but, you know, this is a very poor town. The people probably didn't invite you because, you know, we're very poor. We don't have too much food. But I would love to have you as my guests. But I have to warn you, don't expect too much to eat because, you know, it is a poor town. But whatever I have, I'll gladly share. And the two brothers were so happy to get the invitation. And Kinalach, they go to the Rav's house. Oh boy, was he poor. Of all the houses in the town that were falling apart, his house was really falling apart. Well, all of a sudden, they go into the house, and the family is there, his wife, and Kinanahara, a lot of Kinalach. And the Kinalach were very happy. Oh boy, Tati brought home two guests. But his wife, the Rav's wife, the Rebbetzin, she wasn't exactly as happy as the Rav and his children. And in fact, she got very nervous when she saw two guests. Two guests? Two guests? How am I going to feed two guests? We could hardly feed our family. How could I feed two guests? And she got very nervous and upset. And the Rav right away said, don't worry, don't worry. It'll be okay. We'll share the food. Let's do the mitzvah of Haknasas Orchim. Don't make them feel bad by complaining that we don't have food. We'll have enough food. It's okay. Shh. And Kinalach, they sang Shalom Aleichem. And they made Kiddush on whatever wine was there. And they washed on the challah, whatever challah they had. And they had maybe a little tiny piece of fishy. And now it came time for the soup. And the Rebbetzin served now a bowl of soup to the two guests. And as she was pouring the soup, she put one bowl of soup now in front of Reb Elimelech. And everybody else got a bowl of soup. And as they're starting to eat the soup, all of a sudden, Reb Elimelech picks up a spoon, and instead of picking up the spoon and putting it to his mouth, on the way from the table to his mouth, it knocked into the bowl of soup, and it knocked over the bowl of soup, and the soup spilled all over the table. And the Rav's wife says, what? You spilled the soup? We hardly have enough soup to eat, and you spill your bowl of soup, and the soup is running all over the table. Oh, my tablecloth is getting ruined. Oh, the soup is all over my tablecloth. And the Rav says to his wife, it's a mistake. Don't make him feel bad. It happens that a person spills a bowl of soup. Give him another bowl of soup. How much soup do I have? What? Well, we shouldn't feed the kids, and this beggar spills soup all over the table? Don't make him feel bad. Okay, she gives now a little bit more soup and she adds water to the soup. And she makes a very watery bowl of soup. And she gives it now to Reb Elimelech. And Reb Elimelech carefully lifts up his spoon and it doesn't bang into the bowl. And he's lifting up now, he puts the spoon into the bowl of soup. And he's lifting it up to his mouth. All of a sudden, his elbow knocks into the bowl of soup and it spills over, all over the table. It dumped over the soup. Oh, she starts screaming. Oh, he spilled again the soup. It's running all over the place and it's running all over the table and makes a big mess and on the floor. And she starts to cry. Another bowl of soup he spilled. And the Rav says, look, it happens. A person, you know, is not careful. Give him more soup. I'm not giving more soup. There's no soup left anyway. But don't make him feel bad. The Rav takes his own bowl of soup and he gives it to Reb Elimelech. And Reb Elimelech carefully lifts up his spoon And the Rebbetzin is watching. She's watching his elbow, that it shouldn't touch the soup. And he lifts up the spoon to his mouth. All of a sudden, one of the kids starts talking, asks a question or something. Reb Elimelech turns around to listen, and his other hand bumps into the bowl of soup, and it spills over a third time. Soup everywhere. And the Rebbetzin is screaming three times, the soup spills. What's wrong with this man? What's wrong with this beggar making a big mess of my house, wasting all of our food? And Kinelach Reb Zusha. Now, the interesting thing about this story, usually the funny things that happen in these stories, Reb Zusha does. But this time, Reb Elimelech did all these things. And Reb Zusha now is speaking seriously, and he says, shh. This is what Reb Zusha says to the Rebbetzin. She says, I'm sorry about my brother, but let me tell you something I heard once a long time ago that it says in the Torah. It says, everything that happens in the world happens because it happens in the Shemayim. It must be, if three bowls of soup spilled and made a big mess and ruins things in the world, it must be a kapara that instead of something bigger getting ruined, something little got ruined. So probably, even though it was a mess and it got you upset, that mess and upset was probably bigger than a bigger mess and a bigger upset. And probably in the end, it'll be good for the Jews. And the Rebbetzin listened to this beggar speaking. And for a minute she felt like, you know, this is not like some regular beggar speaking. I don't really understand what she says. I'm sorry. She says, I don't really understand what he's saying, but it's like, you know, she listened to it very carefully. And she thought, he must be saying something very smart, but I don't know what it is. And now we go on with the second part of the story. We are not in a poor family's house. We are now in the palace of the Tsar. And the name of the Tsar at that time was Paul. Tsar Paul. Now, the first part of our story happened on a Friday night. This is also happening on a Friday night. The second half of the story happens in a different place, but the same time, Friday night. Tsar Paul is sitting on his throne in the palace. He is the king. The king is called the Tsar. Now, by the way, it's very interesting. Remember I told you, I think it was last year, that in the Brooklyn Museum were the jewels of the kings of Russia, the Tsar. Do you remember I told you I went over there to see it? Okay. Over there was a picture of Tsar Paul, the same Tsar in our story. The picture was when he was a little boy. I saw that picture. And one of the displays behind the thick glass was a toy that belonged to the Tsar Paul. And also different badges and different kinds of things he wore in his uniform when he became a king. But there was also a toy. And this toy, I saw it. One of his toys. The toys of the Tsar in this story. Do you know how much this toy was worth? How much is an expensive toy that you have? Oh, it could be $100. A boy says he has a toy for $100. This toy was worth close to $1 million. It was made from gold and jewels. This is a toy that belonged to the Tsar. You could see it right there. An interesting toy. Anyway, the Tsar Paul is sitting on his throne. I don't know if he was playing with his toy or not, because he was already now a big man. Shh. And the trumpets blow. Beep, 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 beep. Rabbi Burstyn, you're not allowed to blow a trumpet on Shabbos. Well, I know, it was Friday night, but Tsar Paul didn't exactly keep Shabbos, and neither did his officers. Shh. So they blew the trumpet on a Friday night, and the trumpets blow, and some officers come in to Tsar Paul. And they say, Tsar, we have written down a new decree, and we ask the Tsar to go to his desk to sign the decree that it should become the law in Russia. And the Tsar comes down from his throne, and he goes into the room where he has his desk, and he has his special pens and wax and stuff that he seals laws and makes them official. Not that he has a fish, but he makes them official means that it becomes the law. And the Tsar goes to his desk, and the officers unroll the law that they have just written down. And the law says, the Tsar of Russia, Tsar Paul, hereby makes a new law that this law says the Jews must leave their homes. They must leave Russia. They must leave immediately. And whoever wants can go into their homes and take away all the stuff that they leave behind. And they can take over their homes and their furnitures. And they can take whatever they want from the Jews. A terrible decree was now made against the Jews. And the Tsar Paul now has to sign his name and put the royal stamp. And he takes his royal pen. He dips it in the ink. The feather, of course, a fancy feather. He doesn't have a regular feather. He has a fancy kind of a pen. He dips it into his ink. And he goes now to sign his name on the royal decree. And all of a sudden, as he's about to put his pen on the royal decree, his sleeve, with all of his fancy buttons and badges, knocks into the inkwell, and the inkwell spills over and makes a big mess all over the table. And the servants have to come and clean up the big mess. And right away, the officers pulled away the decree, the law that it shouldn't get full of all the ink from the mess. And the servants spent a long time cleaning up the big mess until everything was cleaned up. They brought new ink. And now the officers put the decree in front of the Tsar. And he is going to now sign it. He dips his pen a second time into the ink. And all of a sudden, as he's about to put the pen, his elbow knocks into the inkwell. And the ink spills again all over the place. The Tsar spills the ink all over the table, makes a big mess. And the servants clean it up again. And now they put for the third time the decree in front of the Tsar, Tsar Paul. And he takes his royal pen and the new ink they gave him. And as careful as he tries to be, can anybody figure out what do you think might have happened the third time as the Tsar is now going to sign the decree?
It's going to spill again.
The soup spilled again?
The soup spilled again.
The Tsar spilled his soup? Was he having soup while he was making the decree? What do you think?
The ink is going to spill.
The ink spilled a third time. Some strange thing happened that he knocked over the inkwell for the third time and it spilled all over the place. And they cleaned it up again. And now the officers put for a fourth time the decree in front of the Tsar. And the Tsar did not pick up his pen. And he did not sign the decree. And the officer's saying, but Tsar, wouldn't the Tsar please sign the decree? The Tsar says, no. Well, you don't start asking the Tsar why not, but don't you want to know why not? Well, the Tsar says, three times the inkwell spilled over. That's a very strange thing to happen. It must mean that it is not meant for this decree to be signed and made a law. Therefore, I will not sign the law. I say we should not have such a law, because three times the inkwell spilled over, it's a sign that we should not go ahead and do this. And Kinalach, the Tsar had them rip up the law, and there was no decree, no terrible law made against the Jews. Now, how many boys can figure out on that Friday night, that was the same Friday night that the soup spilled over three times, can anybody figure out what might be the connection between what happened with Reb Elimelech's soup and what happened in the palace of Tsar Paul? Can you figure out what might be the connection over there? Would anybody like to articulate and put this in words? Anybody see a connection between the soup spilling three times and...
Because the three times the soup spilling over is the connection, is the kapara for the three times the ink.
Very good. Now, we do not learn out from this that you should spill soup, of course. But if a tzaddik spills soup, it's not just a soup being spilled. If a tzaddik does something, even spilling soup, we know this has a connection with halakhite. Every action of a tzaddik, even something you think is very simple, and even spilling soup, is connected with something halak, as we see from this story. Today we're going to talk about the puppet show. Yes, we're not going to tell a story today. We are going to talk about We are going to talk about the puppet show. The Baal Shem Tov says that whatever a Yid sees, whatever a Yid hears, he should learn a lesson in serving Hashem. Today we saw a puppet show. Today we heard a puppet show. We saw and heard an excellent puppet show. So let's learn something from a puppet show. But Rabbi Burstyn, we already learned it, because the puppet show was about the Purim story. Okay, well, that's one thing we learned. But let's talk about puppets. There's an interesting thing to learn about puppets. What is the difference between a puppet and a person? Because the puppets look like people, but we all know that they were not really people. And that's why we went to watch the puppet show, because a puppet is a special thing. And we laugh at the puppets, and the puppets are so interesting. It's a new thing, a puppet show. What is the difference, the main difference, between a puppet and a person?
A puppet, somebody holds something for him to move, but a person doesn't have to move somebody holding him.
Who moves the person?
The person himself.
Ah, very, very good. Very well put. A puppet doesn't do anything by himself. Somebody is inside of that puppet, making that puppet to work. The puppet doesn't do what he wants. The puppet does what the person inside of the puppet wants. The person that is puppeting the puppet. Now, who goes to see a puppet show? People or puppets? Do puppets go to see a puppet show? Or do people go to see a puppet show? Who goes to see a puppet show?
People!
People go to the puppet show. Puppets don't go to the puppet show. Okay, now, what am I getting at? Shh. Everybody here has to think, are you a person or are you a puppet? It could be, hopefully, it should be, you're a person. But it could be that you are a puppet. Oh, let's see. Shh. A person does what they want. Now, who wants to be in charge of you and make you do what you want? You want to be the boss of you. And of course, the way you be the boss is to listen to your boss. Who is your boss? And if you listen to your boss, then you will be the little boss because you listen to the big boss. Who is your boss?
Hashem.
Hashem. When you listen to Hashem, you are doing the right thing for you and you're in charge of yourself the way Hashem wants you. So you're a person. You choose to do the right thing and you choose not to do the wrong thing. But as soon as you wake up in the morning, there's something else inside of you that wants you to do what he wants you to do and not what you really want to do. What a Yid really wants to do is what Hashem wants. But inside of you is something that wants to make you a puppet and do what he wants you to do. The Yetzer Hara. He wants to make you his puppet. He says, do what the Yetzer Hara wants. And that's not what you really want to do. A Yid, deep down inside, only wants to do Hashem's will, Torah and mitzvahs. That's really you. And if you listen to the Yetzer Hara, you're doing what the Yetzer Hara wants, which is against Hashem, and you are becoming a puppet. You don't want to be a puppet. People go to laugh at a puppet, and they say, look at the funny puppet. Somebody else is in that puppet, and he's not anything by himself. He's just a puppet. So hopefully, we want to be a person and not a puppet. A person, we listen to our Yetzer Tov, we listen to Hashem and do Torah mitzvahs, and then we are people. Chas v'shalom, listening to the Yetzer Hara, we are a puppet. And we are just in a puppet show. Puppets in a puppet show. All right. That is the...